Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about pharmacists, traditional pharmacy, alternative pharmacy, natural pharmacy. Many times people say, what is the difference? Or are you telling me that my big box pharmacy doesn't have all the answers, and it's not going to save me? Or on the other side, is my alternative pharmacy going to save me? And we really talk about what is the patient participation in their health? What is the patient willing to do? What is the client ready to step up and say, how can I start to take control of my health? And really, that's where we are going these days. What can you do to be able to shift where your body is going? Is it on the path of unhealthy and you just say, fix me, and you roll it out and you get those little orange bottles? Or you say, I'm going to start needing less of those orange bottles as I stop eating sugar, as I start to move my body more, as I start to pay attention to my stress level, or maybe that I just don't eat three dishes of food and sit down at the buffet, you know, going from breakfast to lunch or lunch to dinner, and don't think twice about it. And then we say, well, maybe I also need some more help because I'm not eating as well as I should. Maybe I need a little bit more guidance in those things that I didn't really realize would help my body heal or would help my body feel better or could help with some of the issues that I'm having, sore muscles or my head is foggy. Or, you know, I really have a lot of residual issues from the health problems that I have. Today we're going to be talking to Dr. Philip Carson. He is a pharmacist, and he was always doing the regular way, and now he is into doing a little bit more of the natural alternative way. So, Dr. Carson, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Gallagher. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to be on your show today.
Well, Dr. Carson, don't you think what I've just said in the beginning is really, it sums up our whole hour? And I really think that's where a lot of people are, and they're like, ooh, tell me more, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Great job there.
You know, I think so many times you and I are both older. I'm almost 60 next month, yahoo. But anyway,
yeah.
I look at it and I say, I look back on all of the ways over the decades we have taken care of our health. I can remember in the 50s, the doctor came to our house if I was sick. I remember I had tonsillitis like forever. And I would just get a shot of penicillin and I was good to go. And then in the 60s, he didn't come to our house anymore. We started picking up orange bottles of antibiotics. And then in the 70s and 80s, it was, oh, I'll just call it in for you and you're good to go. Then we look at the 90s and we say, holy heck, I'm sicker than ever. I don't know what's going on with me. And now the revelation that maybe I need to do something differently. And we say, you know, I think I should maybe avoid some allergens or maybe I should start taking care of myself. I think that's really not only where myself has traveled over these past several decades, but I really think that's where society has taken us. Don't you believe?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I'm 55, so I'm be 56 in a few months. So I'm not far behind you there. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've seen these things. I've been practicing pharmacy since 1985, So I've seen this progression, this change. And what's encouraging me here in recent times is that people are becoming more aware of their health, and they're becoming more conscious of things that are going on in their body. And I think one of the reasons why is that they have watched their parents or their grandparents suffer from these debilitating diseases and conditions that they're dealing with, like diabetes and heart disease. And they're thinking like I am, I don't want to go there. I watched my grandfather suffer for several years with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And so I'm doing what I can to prevent that. And I think there's a lot of other people that are in that, getting in that preventive mindset as well. And that's encouraging to me, because that's the people that I really love working with.
And I really think that a long time ago, it was the idea that the doctors were going to be able to take care of you. But I really look at back, let's think back really into the 50s and 60s again. The doctor was in a community. He saw you if you fell in the grocery store, and he would say, come see me on Wednesday. And he knew visually when you came to see him on Wednesday how you fell, which part of your body did you turn, how you look now. In other words, he had a bird's eye view of being able to know a little bit more intuitively, other than just this quick 15-minute reporting that everybody's doing now. And really, he knew about your health because he saw your, he would know something about your health otherwise. Or let's say if you, your grandfather had diabetes and now you're in the 50s and 60s and you're not feeling well, he'll say, I saw this same picture with your grandfather. Maybe you should come in too and we'll check you out. So really, I think what's happened is that all of these interactions are no longer there. And now people really have kind of been thrown to the wolves, more or less, in these last few decades, because they have to figure it out themselves. Doctors no longer have time, number one. No longer are they relying on all of those other skills that they used to have. They don't even touch. I mean, I took a friend to the doctor. Doctor never even looked at the patient hardly, other than a 2-second glance, and didn't even lay a finger on this person, and hadn't seen this person for 10 years. And I went, wow, so much for that physical exam. And then they sent a papers in the mail with your ROS, your review of systems, and they had all these things filled in. And I said, how the heck do they know that? They didn't even lay a finger on you, and I sat there and watched, So I think it's really, we're coming to a crash time, I believe. And I think, you and I are setting up the availability to say, guys, it's coming, it's coming. We're sort of like the Paul Revere, We're riding out there and we're saying, pay attention, pay attention. And I really think, your transition, you can see that happening. Haven't you seen that in pharmacy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've seen the medical practice model change dramatically over the years, as well as pharmacy practice changed dramatically. And it's more about numbers now and about dollars and, pushing people through, getting as many people through as you can. A lot of doctors have in practices that they're in, these group practices or hospital-owned practices, they've got quotas they've got to meet. They've got to see a certain number of patients today. There's a certain number of dollars that they've got to generate. And they're pushed to do that. So this idea of sitting down and doing a physical examination, sitting down with a patient for 30 minutes and talking and trying to figure things out and trying to get to the root cause of what their illness is, that doesn't happen anymore. And in the standard medical practice. Now, I am encouraged to see that there are some doctors who are breaking away from that. They're going out on their own. They're opening up their own practices, like the doctor that I'm working with in my community now. She's a MD that has decided to do that. And she was already practicing what I call functional medicine to a degree, as best as she could. But now that she's out on her own, she can fully do that. And I see more and more doctors now breaking away from the standard mold that they've been put into and doing more functional type medicine. And that's what you were describing in back in the 50s and 60s. That's what was happening. That was called functional medicine, where a doctor would sit down with you and talk with you and take time and try to determine what your problem, what your underlying cause of your problem was.
Right. I think we've really gotten into healthcare equals business. It is no longer healthcare equals patient. It is strictly a business. And we know this because the now with all of the insurance requirements, and once you started putting things into a computer, protocols, treatment plans are exactly what the computer is going to spit out. There is no differentiation. There is no expansiveness. Doctor no longer has the ability to be able to say, I think it's something different, or I think you need a different drug, or I think we need to look a different way. They must follow the protocol. They must follow the treatment. And I think there was a lot of squawking because everybody wanted the systems to be able to be in there, take care of you know, put everything in together in a computer and all the world will be all glory. And they really did not think farther out. I think, you know, sometimes people are very secular in their thinking and they didn't realize and they thought about certain aspects that would benefit themselves, but not how it would further play out to not benefit the patient. So what have you seen in pharmacy and how it's changed? I mean, we all know pharmacies. A long time ago, they used to be compounding pharmacies. You know, the doctor would make what you wanted. Then we went to big box pharmacies. And now we're back to some few select compounding and natural and alternative pharmacies. How have you seen that change?
That's, you know, when I graduated from pharmacy school in 1985, it was a lot of small mom-and-pop independent pharmacies. A few chains were out there. There were, you know, as far as compounding, there wasn't a lot of that going on at that time, very limited. But over the years, the mom-and-pops have dried up. They've been sucked up by the chains, and there's very few, you know, mom-and-pop stores, pharmacies anymore, as far as in most towns. And in most cities, you don't see any. It's primarily, you know, the big box stores, the chains that have taken over. You do find in some cities the compounding operations, the specialty type operations where they're what we call niche pharmacies, and they're providing that niche there for doctors who want to do these specialty items and prescribe the compounding things for patients in particular that need those items that they can't get in a, you know, a processed or standardized medication. So, you know, that I've seen that grow. I've seen the compounding side of things grow tremendously. And I had a compounding pharmacy myself for a little while. And I did that on a small scale. In the area where I am, it's, you know, it's just not the population enough for to do it on a big scale. So I did it on a small scale.
Let's talk about that. What is a compounding pharmacy? I think many people are confused about that. And to me, when I think of a compounding pharmacy, I think of something designed just for you. And when we look at these big box pharmacies, you know, they pretty much just put out those standard prescriptions and you take it home. And then we wonder why we've got all of these drugs that we have in our water systems, we have them in our sewer systems, and we have them in our soil. And even just this past weekend, they had a drug recovery thing. You could drive by and drive into the Superdome here, and you would drive through, and they'd have big boxes. And if you had any drugs that you didn't want anymore or were kind of hanging around the house, you just pitched them into this big box. And then I asked them, what were you going to do with them? They said, they had no answers. And then they said, oh, we burn them. And I'm thinking, no, that's not the right answer. So, you know, compounding pharmacies really, essentially, were a very good niche because you didn't get a drug that was too much for you. If you were 100 pounds and you needed a cholesterol medicine, you didn't get the same medicine that a 400-pound person might have gotten. You know, it was specifically for you. Or if you were just after cancer and you had these big pills you couldn't take anymore, it could be titrated down into a liquid, or it could be put into smaller capsules, or it could be in a different format, and it could be a lesser amount instead of just keep, you know, what I call fire hosing everybody with the same drug, and we're all different people. So
That's right.
Is your really concept of that from your, you know, your profession?
Yeah, well, that you know, what you just described is one of the components of compounding, to be able to prepare those specialty medications and those specialty doses for individual patients. You know, one of the things that I compounded quite a bit when I was doing it was low-dose medications for infants that had been born with heart disease. They had to have these certain medications, and you know, you had to compound it. They break it down into a dose that that infant could take. So, yeah, those specialty things are, you know, one of the key things for compounding. But also, one of the big things in compounding now is natural hormone therapy, or what we call bioidentical hormone therapy. And a lot of people, especially women, after the big study was released several years ago showing that the synthetic hormones that were being prescribed to them was causing so much cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, all of these problems being linked to the taking of these synthetic hormones, that's when the bioidentical hormone therapies really took off. They were available before that, but they were frowned upon by the medical profession because they were they were not an FDA-approved bottled pill that you could take. It was something that was compounded from natural sources. But so many people, men and women, have converted to using these this bioidentical hormone therapy. And so that's one of the big things with compounding this day and time. Another thing is pet formulas. You know, I did a lot of veterinary products as well and compounded. A lot of people may not know that compounding pharmacies do veterinary products because the animals have to have certain dosage forms of a particular medication that, you know, you need to compound for them in a form that they will actually consume. So that's another thing. So compounding has several facets to it as far as what's being done out there this day and time with compounding.
And it's interesting you say that about animals because so many times people would say, well, I have to go to the vet because he's going to give him amoxicillin. And you look at them and that's the same amoxicillin that's in your cupboard, you know? People really were shocked, I think, when that revelation came out, that they understood that their animals were given the same drugs that they were given.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and people go, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that, you know. So let's speak for a little bit about the origin of drugs. We always want to say that, you know, it's a chemical, and but you know from your basis, you know, a lot of our biochemistry classes, you know, you can take a compound that's natural in the world and say this works great, but I have to reproduce it. So if I have to reproduce it, I have to take one of those chemical bonds, change it just a drop, and now I can chemically produce it. So can you share it from your point of view, how that looks and what that really means?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the medications on the market today come from natural sources. They're plant-based, a lot of them are. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't realize that. But you can't patent a plant, a natural growing plant or an extract from a plant. The drug companies can't patent that. So if they can't get a patent on it, then they can't have an exclusive on it, and they can't make millions or billions of dollars on it. So they do exactly what you just said. They will extract something from that plant, or one of the, what's called a phytochemical from the plant. They'll extract that, chemically alter it, and make a drug out of it. So they've got a synthetic product now that was actually derived from a natural product. A good example of that is the cholesterol medications that a lot of people are taking every day, the statin drugs. Statin drugs originally derived from red yeast rice. And red yeast rice is available as a natural over-the-counter product as well. But the statin drugs, the idea came from that natural product. So that's a good example. And with the chemical alteration there, you have side effects that go along with it that you wouldn't necessarily have with the plant itself or the plant extract itself. So that's the problem, one of the major problems with these drugs, with the chemical alteration that's taking place here. You open up the door for side effects and potential other problems to be created from taking that chemically altered drug.
Right, because our body, it's very important to note, is our body is full of chemical reactions. And if you're asking an A plus B to equal C and to have that reaction, that's what you're looking for. However, if you give it half of A and maybe a subset of B, maybe a B1, you're not going to get C. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, do I put filtered water in a glass with lemon and I get lemonade, or do I put tap water in a glass with lemon and I get lemonade? And if you took both of those lemonades and analyzed them, you'd have two totally different lemonades. You know, but yet you'd still have the name lemonade, which is exactly what's happening, I believe, in the drug system, where we are taking those and we're taking particulates of it, yet we're calling it the same names.
Yeah. There's so many alterations, variations of the same type drug or class of drugs out there, and you've got a company that will develop or discover this one particular one, and then another company will come along and they'll chemically alter it just a little bit, make it a little bit different, and they put another name on it, but you've got the same class of drug, same type drug. It works basically the same way, but because it doesn't have the exact same chemical structure as the original, then they can call it a new drug and give it another name and put it out there on the market. And
I think that's it. People could liken it to a grocery store. And what you and I are saying, we're trying to say it many different ways so people can understand and be able to have a conversation around this with your family and your friends. When you go to a grocery store, you think, my gosh, it's a really big grocery store. They must have a ton of food. When you look at it, if you see a farmer's market and a butcher and a dairy, that's the beginnings of your food. The only thing a grocery store does is prepares it in 10,000 different ways. So there's no bigger grocery stores. You know, it's the funniest thing. I would say to my husband, I would say, what do you want for dinner? And he'd say, I don't know, I'm getting tired of eating. I said, well, you have a choice. You have beef, fish, chicken, or poultry. What do you mean? I said, those are the only four things you got a choice of. And I said, no, don't you get it? That's all you have a choice of, you know, for that particular thing that you're looking to eat. And it's just we have skewed it in our mind that all of these other variations are other things when in essence they're really not. It's just what we've added to them or changed them. It's sort of like a drug. It's sort of like cupcakes on a shelf. You know, you can spray paint one with pink. You could put glitter on another. You can turn around and put, you know, a little bit filling in another. But they're all the same thing. They're cupcakes, you know. And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention with these with the medications I was talking about, especially with the statin drugs, that a lot of people are unaware of, is that the nutrient depletions that these
right.
medications cause. And the statin drug is one that's real important because it depletes a particular nutrient from our bodies called coenzyme Q10. And
right.
what bothers me is that these patients come to the pharmacy, have come to the pharmacy for years with the prescriptions for these statin drugs, and nobody's told them that,
right.
hey, this drug is going to cause this depletion. You need to take this nutrient or you're going to end up with these side effects or these problems like
mm-hmm.
muscle aches and muscle pain, weakness, fatigue that's caused by the depletion of this coenzyme Q10. They don't know that. Nobody's told them that. And a lot of times, you know, they'll come to me or they've come into my pharmacy, they've been getting it somewhere else, and nobody's ever told them. And so, you know, I get to tell them that, and they just, you know, they say, why didn't somebody ever tell me this? No wonder I've been hurting.
Right.
No wonder I have, you know, muscle weakness. No wonder I have trouble getting up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen patients that were on statin drugs, high doses of statin drugs, end up in a wheelchair, end up bedridden.
Yeah.
They didn't know why. Nobody had ever talked to them about that.
And Dr. Carson, you and I both, and at our age, I think we can sit down and say, you have looked at a patient for many decades, and you've seen their demise, and
yeah.
you're saying, I wish they knew better. I wish they could have changed differently. I wish
yeah.
they took a different path, or I wish we could help. And sometimes we just have to step back and say, we're sharing this out of the goodness of what we know, and we're
yeah.
hoping that you choose a different path.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And I have patients come to me all the time now that have been on the statin drugs, and they're having these problems, and they say, I can't take this stuff anymore. My doctor's telling me I have to take it, that
mm-hmm.
I need this medication, but I can't stand what it's doing to me. What can I do? And thankfully, there are some natural alternatives. There are some other ways of controlling cholesterol if it needs to be controlled. Often it doesn't, but in some of these patients, because their cholesterol
right.
numbers are fine, they've just been made to believe that they're not,
right.
but or they think they're not. And so, but there are some natural alternatives, and I do like to talk to people about that and share with them that information and help them understand that, hey, you know, the statin drug is not the only answer. If you do have legitimate cholesterol issues, there are some other things you can do. And one of those is lifestyle changes, because a lot of times that's the major problem with heart disease, whether it be high cholesterol or it be, you know, clogged arteries for whatever reason, or if they're having weak, you know, weak heart. It's, you know, a lot of times it's lifestyle. And making those lifestyle changes is one of the things that, you know, I talk to people about and say, hey, if you really want to see some improvement here, if you really want things to get better, then, you know, we need to talk about your diet. We need to talk about how much water you're drinking.
Right.
You know, we need to talk about how much exercise you're getting.
Or how much sunlight you see, or what is your
exactly.
mood? You know, what is your vitamin D status? What is,
exactly.
you know, just, I think just picking up people and taking them outside, you can see chemical reactions sparking like wildfire in people. They feel
oh, yeah.
better. They smell better. They sense better. They detoxify. They start to sweat. Their
yeah.
eyes start to catch some more sun rays. So their eyes start to dilate better. I mean, you can just go on and on and on, you know, just about changing whatever you're doing, make a change, to make a change for just a week and say, is there something different? And you'll will notice there are changes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I talk to people about their vitamin D levels
mm-hmm.
all the time because even though we're in the South and we've got plentiful sunshine, people
right.
don't get out and get enough of that sunshine. And
right.
the people that are working, they're working inside primarily, so they're not getting out. And that's why I wrote a blog last year, put a blog post out titled Eat Lunch Naked,
mm-hmm.
and not encouraging people to, you know, get out and eat naked and get arrested.
Right.
but But to get out and get more sunshine during the noonday hours,
right,
when you get the maximum production of vitamin D during those hours, with the minimal amount of sunlight exposure, 20 minutes
depending
out in the sun can do wonders for you.
Depending on where you live, because I'll tell you, 20 minutes out in a New Orleans summer sun, you're done. You're soaked. Your underwear is soaked. You got to go home.
Oh, yeah. We got the humidity to deal with here.
Yeah, and I think that's where people really get hung up, is they think about their lifestyle issues. I don't want to sweat. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to be changing something that might cause me friction in my life. And then they say, oh, well, I don't want to increase my stress level by making those changes. When really those changes, if you don't like the way I'm saying it or you're saying it, take the changes and say, I will do it a different way and alter it for your own lifestyle, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I try to help people understand, that they can do that.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between, let's walk your traditional pharmacy way that you used to walk, and then your way you do now, in the way you look at diabetes. Before, when you were just normal, how a big box pharmacist would react when you come in about diabetes, and how it would be differently now. We'll take that topic first.
Okay. All right. Well, with the traditional training that I had, I tell people, in pharmacy school, I was taught the history of natural medicine, not the application of it. So a few years after I was out, people started coming into the pharmacy asking me questions about supplements and herbal products, and I couldn't answer their questions. I didn't know, because I hadn't been taught. And so I didn't like that. I said, I got to find out what they're talking about here. I got to learn these things so I can help these people and answer their questions. I don't like not knowing. So I started taking courses. I started traveling the country, going all over the country to attend seminars, weekend seminars, and training courses that were being taught by different clinicians across the country. The application of natural products and natural therapies. And in doing that, I learned that there were some natural alternatives for diabetes. There were some underlying causes of diabetes that could be corrected. Traditionally, what I was taught to do was, dispense a medication, dispense insulin. No mention of, well, if you made these lifestyle changes or if you took this particular supplement, you could see a tremendous improvement in your blood sugar. I didn't know any of that. We didn't talk about any of that in pharmacy school. Started learning these things and realizing, hey, there's more out there. There's some things out there with diabetes that can help people. And I started applying what I was learning. For example, in my course of study, I read that there was a study that had been done on chromium deficiency being a possible underlying cause of type 2 diabetes. So I started with my dad, because my dad had been diagnosed with as a diabetic. He was taking 6 pills a day trying to control his blood sugar to no avail. Still couldn't get it under control. So I told him, I said, I've read about the chromium and the study that's been done on chromium. I said, I want you to try it. So I got him a bottle, had him start trying it, taking it before with his meals. And he went from taking 6 pills a day to 1.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, there's something to this. I've had that experience over and over with patients with chromium and with other supplements like Gymnema, herbal extract for diabetes. So my whole concept, my whole way of practicing pharmacy as far as working with diabetics has totally changed. But, the most important thing and the best thing I can tell people and teach people about diabetes is lifestyle changes, their diet. And that's where I start with them. I say, if when a diabetic comes to me for help, I tell them, you know, we've got to start with your diet. That's the number one place to start. We can do supplements, we can do all these other things, but we got to start with your diet. And if they're not willing to make those changes, then I can't help them.
I think also to the concept that prevention medicine in a traditional form right now is called testing and then give you a drug to, quote, prevent. And really,
yeah,
what that has done is put you on the path already with a label, because
yeah,
that's not really the best way to be. Prevention is, I don't even look at testing, you know, anymore. Prevention is more or less, what can you alter first? Can you, if you come in and say, I don't feel well, say, okay, well, I'm not going to test you. I'm not going to give anything to you until you do these things. You know, a report on sleep, a report on how your mental and moods are, or maybe what your food and your diet is, and maybe what is your work history. Those different things, because until you have a firm grasp on that, you're really just, as I would say, peeing in the ocean, and you'll never really get to the point where the person is really feeling better. Because you really are so focused in a silo of identifying one symptom, tack a disease name on it, because you want to be able to follow this path of treatment. And then people go out saying, yeah, I have this disease. And then you're down that slippery slope.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what's happening.
Let's talk a little bit about stress, about the same thing. How do you look at it from a traditional side, and how did you look at it now? Because people, stress, I think, has been a tag name into the 90s. Everybody was stressed, and they thought it was cool to be stressed. Now people are saying, well, I don't want to be stressed, but it's still kind of comes up in a lot of conversation.
Oh, yeah. Stress and the stresses that we deal with in the world today, and all types of and all forms of stress, I think is one of the underlying causes of a lot of people's health issues, physical as well as mental, that can be totally stress related. Typically, traditionally, you know, people were stressed out, or wherever they would come in, they would get an antidepressant, or they'd get an anti-anxiety medication to, you know, make them feel better, calm them down, whatever. That's been the traditional way of treating stress issues, or they would get a sleeping pill to help them sleep because the stress was disrupting their sleep. So that's the traditional way of looking at it. But, you know, what I do with people on the natural side of things is that we take a look at, you know, what their stress issues are. We talk to them about stress. Hey, you know, and a lot of people don't even realize they're dealing with stress. I sometimes ask people, well, you know, tell me about your stress. No, I don't have any stress. And then, you know, I start asking them other questions, and they're totally stressed out. They just don't acknowledge it, and some people don't. Some people are totally aware of it. Some people are dealing with stress, but they don't acknowledge it. So, you know, a series of questions and talking to them and trying to help them understand that, hey, stress is a problem, and that there's some things you can do to help relieve that. And I talk to them about stress relieving techniques and exercises and those kind of things, the simple things that they can do to help. But a lot of people have been under stress for so long, or they've had some kind of major traumatic event in their life, emotional or physical trauma, that has disrupted their adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands are the two little glands that sit on the top of the kidneys that are also known as the stressor glands. And these glands catch the brunt of the stress in our lives. And when they're not functioning properly, it can cause all kinds of problems in the body. And some people have gotten to the point of what's called adrenal exhaustion or adrenal failure, or sometimes their adrenals are just overreacting because they're right in the middle of the stress. So adrenal testing is one of the things that that we talk about and that we do with some of these people to help them get to the root cause of what's going on with a lot of the symptoms that they're experiencing.
And even with stress, you know, when you have stress, it's not something that is put upon you. Stress is how you are looking at the world in which you exist. And I think that's very important to notice, because people say, they go to the doctor and say, I have stress, fix it. And the way they fix it is they want a drug to be able to put a cap on it. So what you're doing is you're pushing things down. And a lot of people, you know, say, well, I'm pushing everything down. And then they're taking all of their anti-anxiety medications and everything. And then we go along the happy path. And then one day they have a really great time and they're so happy. They enjoy it. And people say, oh, no, we know what you look like normally. That must be a bipolar episode. Now we're going to give you a bipolar drug. Just because all of a sudden your inner spirit has cracked through that facade that anti-anxiety drug has proposed, and now you're looking at, well, you don't fit that paradigm, we're going to put you down, now we're going to put you down another way. And so many times, you know, what we say is, can you see how you can maybe bring yourself back into balance without medications first? Because once you do get on that path, you start to appear or to adhere, as I would say, to treatment plans that may or may not be in your best interest. That's a very hard road sometimes to get off of once you've been on it, because even then, your sense of who you are, you may have lost it at that time. Let's look at, again, at stress. You know, cortisol levels go up, you know, but then eventually, it's sort of like, I think of adrenal glands when I speak to clients. I say, adrenal glands are like, you know, the person standing in front of you on a dirt road when someone's ready to shoot at you all the time, and you're behind them cowering, saying, I'm scared, and they're still standing there, but eventually, they get enough holes in them, there isn't any more left, and it'll get through to you.
Yeah.
So really it's about, you know, your cortisol will go up, but eventually your cortisol says, I can't fight this fight anymore, I'm done, and you'll have flatlined cortisol.
Yeah.
And when you have flatlined cortisol, you're in a whole other ball game. You know.
Exactly.
So but a drug and an anti-anxiety drug is not going to fix your flatlined cortisol, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to think, you know, am I going to keep tampering it down, or am I going to look at it and say, well, how am I reacting to my kids screaming? How am I reacting to the job that I really hate? Or how am I acting to the husband that really needs to be kicked to the curb? You know, there's things that you need to be more responsible for, you know, in your life, and say those things just aren't working, instead of saying they're put upon me. Because, you know, as you and I both know, patients are not victims. You're not a victim of society. You're not a victim of the doctor or the drugs or the work or the job. We really have to step up, and I think that's where you and I are both saying, got to look around and say, man, you know, what I would say is, you know, this sandbox isn't working for me. What's going on? Before collecting all the drugs, you know?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I tell all these stress patients that I deal with, I tell them, I say, everybody deals with stress. I mean, we're you know, as long as we're in this world, we're going to have some stress issues to deal with, and you're going to have stress issues. But here's the thing, I can help you with supplements, and we can help restore, you know, your adrenals and get your cortisol levels in balance. But it's up to you to keep it there. You've got to make a choice to manage that stress and stop letting it manage you. And that's what I tell people. And that's often what's happening with people. They're being manipulated or managed by the stress in their lives instead of taking control of it and managing it. And so I encourage them, you know, to realize that, recognize that, and start to do the things necessary to manage that stress and stop letting it manage them.
And that's a tough place to be, because if you're a doctor and you have 15 minutes, you're going to say, lose weight, do this, 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 and this, and you turn around and walk out.
Yeah.
Or if you're a pharmacist, you're going to say, I suggest a big box one, maybe suggest this and say, check back with your doctor. You know, Or then if you get a nurse practitioner that will say, this is only as much as I can do, go see a specialist. So there's always somewhere or something else, the handoff, as we call it.
Yeah.
And really what you need is people that will say, I'm not going to hand you off. Let's sit down and figure it out.
Yeah.
I know with my work, I'm a personal advocate, and that's what I do is let's see if we can figure these things out, go around the whole circle. And that's what you're also saying that you're able to do is go around the circle and see what's maybe missing out and how can we work with that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think it's a tough place to be because when you say, does my insurance cover it? Well, if my insurance doesn't cover it, then I'm not going to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to remember that insurance is a business. Healthcare
yep.
is a business. Nowhere in the definition of healthcare or these different types of things does it say, or insurance, does it say that we're going to take care of the person and help them? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Insurance is the business of healthcare. That is it. You've given them that power by giving them that card, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you found that most of the time with your clients that you help is that there's been a real resistance to that change?
Absolutely, yeah. And that really disturbs me too. And because you have so many people with that mindset that, you know, well, I know I need to do this. I know what you're saying, you know, and I want to do it, but my insurance won't pay for it, so I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I often want to tell them, you know, people say, well, I can't afford that. Well, you know, I want to grab them and say, look, you can afford this, you can afford that, you can afford these other things that you're doing. Is your health not that important to you that you can not give up something else here somewhere else and you know, pay for this treatment or pay for these supplements? But people are in that mindset. They've got that mindset. They've been programmed that way that, hey, we've got insurance now, and insurance is going to take care of this or whatever I
right.
need. And if insurance don't take care of it, then I can't do it.
We always liken it to the car. If you, you know, you ram your car against the wall, the insurance will fix it. But
yeah.
if you don't put oil in it and you don't put brakes on it and all this other stuff, you can't go say, oh, my car's not slowing down. Insurance company, can you fix it? You know,
yeah.
or, you know, all these other things. And, you know, the crisis of hitting the wall, your insurance will take care of it. Sort of like in physical parts, your medical insurance, when you, so to say, hit the wall, that's called your catastrophic insurance, you know? You've hit
mm-hmm.
the wall. But all along, you know, it's just you really need to be able to look at it. How can you prevent that wall from coming? And I think it's pretty much a long time ago, you know, when healthcare was not so people didn't crave to it all the time. I think now we've come to the point where people are so much needing to be able to work longer, to be able to do things to an older age. You know, now that people are living longer, people are demanding more out of their physical bodies when I'm not sure that physical bodies are going to be able to do it all the time. And then
yeah.
when they don't, you know, society really says, well, you must be doing something wrong because your physical body didn't make it. And it's like, oh, goodness. So I think we're putting a lot of too many expectations on the physical body when really maybe just asking it to do the best that it can is really where we need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, well, it's a tough place to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if someone dies of heart disease when they're 60s, we can't wait to find out what's the cause. Maybe they just
yeah.
had heart disease and maybe they just died. It's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to be able to just kind of let some of that go. We see older people, you know, in their 90s and we say, oh, how did you get to live so long, you know? I look at my grandmother. She lived until the late 90s. I think she was 98 or 99.
Mm-hmm.
And her day consisted of 3 hours a day, every day. She sat on her back porch on a rocker and watched the sky and the flowers and the cat and the clouds.
Yeah.
And that's what she did. So that was her meditation, you know?
Yeah.
And are we still demanding, oh, no, it must be your bottle of wine, it must be your drug you're taking, and we diss all of the good in life to be able to say, no, this is what I demand. And I think that's what you and I have both been saying for this whole show.
Yeah. And people, you know, are so busy and so into things that they don't take time to have those meditative times. They don't take time to really enjoy the things around them and enjoy the beautiful nature and earth that God's given us, and they don't take time to to participate in those things because we're so busy. We got to do this, we got to do that, but we need to take those lessons from Grandma and sit down and relax and enjoy the things around us and have that good meditative time. That that meditation that you're talking about there is one of the key things to living a healthy life, I think.
Yeah, it's a tough thing when people want to find quick fixes. And I think really that's what pharmacy is all about, a quick fix. And be able to say, you know, hey, stop whatever's coming because I'm not going to have that happen. And really, traditionally, that's what pharmacy has always been. You know, something's out of whack, and that was the fix. So I think just having different ways to look at it and say, how does the patient fit in? How did we get here? Where did I end up on this road? Might be something that will ease the way, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That, absolutely. And, you know, that's you know, one of the things, one of the reasons why I've changed the way I do things, because I want people to see that. I want people to see that, hey, you know, you can make these few little lifestyle changes and you may not need this drug. You may not need this medication. You know, there's simple things that you can do sometimes that can prevent you from having to take a particular drug or can help you get off of a particular drug. And that's what a lot of people are coming to me now or have in recent years saying, you know, I don't want to take this medication anymore. I don't like what it's doing to me. What can I do? And that's encouraging for me to see that. And the people that I've helped and worked with, for them to do the right thing, to make those good choices that we've been talking about, and they go out and they do that, and they come back and they say, wow, I can't believe how much better I'm feeling. Thank you for telling me that. Thank you for showing me that. I mean, that's why I do what I do. That's the reward of it, and that's why practicing traditionally, I didn't have people coming back to me saying, hey, thank you for giving me that bottle of pills. Thank you for all these side effects that I'm having from it. but to have them come back and say, you know, thank you for telling me about that supplement, or thank you for helping me to make these lifestyle changes. Wow, I'm so thankful and appreciative for what you've done for me. That's rewarding. That's a blessing.
So, Dr. Carson, in closing, can you share a little bit about your work and how people could find out more information about you?
Yeah. I have a website. I do a lot of online counseling and consulting and coaching. I work with people on an individual basis, coaching them back to better health, and also coaching people that are in pretty good health, but they want to stay that way. So they can find me at carsonnatural.com. That's my website. And I've also recently opened up a medical clinic with a local MD, the Life Transformation Medical Center that we have here in our local area, just outside of Tupelo, Mississippi. But the easiest way to get me is to go to the carsonnatural.com website, or they can email me at phil@carsonnatural.com.
Well, Dr. Carson, it was a real pleasure to speak with you today because so many people are confused about their options. And really what we are shedding a light on is how you can start that conversation with your doctor and to see the other options that you may have. So I really think we really did a great job of sharing that, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot, Dr. Gallagher. It's been great being with you today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful day. And if you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Philip Carson, the link is on the bottom of today's show page that will take you directly to his website. Please do step back and say, what kind of road am I on? And is this the road that I choose to be on, I want to be on, and not feel that you're a victim of the society, the treatment plans, the insurance card, or even if someone's not listening to you and it's a physician that you just say, gosh, you know, I really, this is not what I want to do, and they're insisting, find someone else. You always have those options. So thank you so much for joining us today, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.